You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
In the early morning hours of June 22, 2013, a house in rural Kentucky caught fire under strange circumstances. The small blaze had started on a couch but was quickly extinguished. Inside the home, firefighters found personal items belonging to an 18-year-old woman, but the young woman herself was nowhere to be found. Hours earlier, 18-year-old Brooklyn Farthing had been at that house. And while she was there, she texted a friend, "I'm scared, please hurry." But before anyone could get there to pick her up, the house was on fire and Brooklyn was gone. Now, over a decade later, Brooklyn's family is still searching for answers and hoping that someone will come forward to tell them what really happened at that house. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Brooklyn Farthing. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. Today's story is a creepy one, and it's also frustrating because so little information has been released by law enforcement. There is a person of interest in the case, but we don't have his full name, nor do we know anything about him, really. And it's one of those cases that's seemingly stalled from a law enforcement perspective, but it happened in a really small town. So hopefully there are people out there who know more than what they've been saying up to this point. Before we dive into Brooklyn's story, though, we'd like to thank our newest Patreon supporters. Taryn S., Laura Z., and Christy. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so, so much.
Your support helps us keep the show going. And if you want to join them, you can head over to our Patreon and join at any level, starting at just $2 a month for ad-free episodes and a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. So with that out of the way, let's talk about Brooklyn Farthing. Brooklyn Shay Farthing, who went by Brooke, was born on August 26, 1994, and she grew up in the close-knit community of Berea, Kentucky. She is raised by her mother, Shelby, and stepfather, Randall Walker. She was the middle of three sisters. Tasha Thomas is her older sister, and Paige Farthing is her younger sister. Brooke's family has described her as an energetic, fun-loving teenager who deeply cared for others. As a child, she had been a Girl Scout for many years, participating in community service projects like making care kits for Hurricane Katrina victims and visiting nursing homes. That giving spirit carried into her teens. Her friends knew Brooke as someone who would do anything to help anyone, as Tasha later said. At 5'1" and 105 pounds, Brooke was petite but fierce. She loved hunting and four-wheeling outside, yet she also loved makeup, fashion, and the color pink. Her style often mixed the two. She might wear a camo print with a little bit of sparkle. Every night, almost without fail, she'd whip up a batch of brownies or some other treat. Baking was one of her favorite hobbies. In June of 2013, Brooklyn had just graduated from Madison Southern High School and was eager to enjoy the summer before starting the next chapter of her life. She wasn't completely sure of her long-term plans. Cosmetology had been a dream and college was on the horizon, but she was happy to take a little break after graduation and spend time with friends and family. The Farthing Walker family was close-knit. In fact, Brooke and Paige were nearly inseparable despite their two-year age difference. Brooke was especially protective of Paige and hated conflict. She was often the peacemaker if any family disagreements arose. She was also very close with her extended family. In late June 2013, they had a special reason to celebrate. Brooke's grandfather, Papa Kenny, was turning 70, and despite his poor health, the family was gathering to celebrate his birthday. So earlier on the morning of June 21st, Brooke and 16-year-old Paige both went to take their driving tests.
Okay, at the same time.
Yeah, the same day, same morning, everything. So Brooke was 18, Paige had just turned 16. So I guess Brooke didn't want to get her license right away. And they went to do it together. Now, Brooke passed.
Oh, no.
And Paige did not.
Oh.
Yeah.
Crushing.
I know. So like any close-knit family, that obviously became a running joke throughout the day. And everybody was kind of making fun of Paige for failing.
Yikes.
So the girls, after their tests and everything, they visited the restaurant where their older sister Tasha worked. And, you know, they obviously shared the news. And so Paige was obviously upset and complaining about failing. And then Brooke was just grinning ear to ear and talking about how she was going to convince her dad to let her borrow his truck. Because, you know, she was a licensed driver now. So
yeah,
why not, right?
Yeah,
like, she
absolutely.
Was ready. She was making plans. Like, it was a very exciting, happy day. You know, maybe not for Paige so much. But for Brooke and the rest of the family, it was a good day. And like I said, they had Papa Kenny's birthday party that night. It was just a good family day. So that evening, Brooke, her sisters, and their whole family, basically, gathered at their Granny Bonnie's house to celebrate Papa Kenny's 70th birthday. And it was a lovely party, but as Tasha later told reporters, quote, "I didn't know it would be my last time celebrating Papa's birthday or doing so together with Paige and Brooke," end quote. Because within 12 hours, Brooke would vanish. And nothing in their lives would ever be the same. After the family birthday festivities wound down on June 21st, Brooke and Paige had another event on their calendar. It was a house party with friends. And this wasn't anything special. It was just like your typical Friday night kickoff to summer gathering among the local young crowd. The party was at a house on Redlick Road, which is a rural area outside of Berea, and the sister's cousin, a girl who was around their age, was joining them as well. Again, like a lot of family in this town. So Brooke made plans to spend the night with her best friend, who would also be at the party. So she packed an overnight bag with a change of clothes and, you know, essentials. So basically she was wearing like a cute party outfit, right? Like she's wearing, I think, a skirt and like cowboy boots. But she packed a bag with sweats and just like comfortable clothes.
Right.
Exactly. And, you know, her toothbrush and all that stuff. So that was her plan. They're all going to go to the party together. And then later, Brooke was going to go stay with her friend. So they got there around 7 p.m. or so. And the party was already underway. Again, by all accounts, it was just a fairly ordinary teenage party. There was music, there was a little drinking, but it was just friends hanging out.
Yeah.
However, plans changed in a way that left Brooke in an uncomfortable spot. Shortly after arriving, Paige and their cousin found that the party either wasn't their scene or they just didn't want to stay out much longer. Regardless, they just weren't into it. So they wanted to take off, but Brooke didn't. Like, she was having a good time. She was meeting her friend there later. So Paige and the cousin did end up leaving, and they talked to Brooke about it. You know, they didn't just ghost her or whatever. They had a conversation, and Brooke's like, no, I'm good. You guys can take off. I'm going to meet my friend here anyway, whatever, right?
So all, like, perfectly normal up
Very
to this
normal.
Point.
Because also at the party, Brooke knew basically everyone there.
I mean, I would imagine this sounds like very small town stuff.
Exactly.
Like everybody knows everybody.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So yeah, she knew basically everybody there and she was going to meet her friend. She was going to stay at her house. So like she didn't feel that she needed like her cousin and her sister to stay there if they didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a sketchy situation where you're like, oh no, please don't leave me. Like I need a little backup. It was not that at all. But unfortunately, Brooke's overnight plans fell through as the night went on. So the friend she was supposed to stay with ended up deciding to spend the night with her boyfriend instead of having Brooke stay over. According to witnesses, Brooke was upset by this, and they apparently got into a heated argument at the party over the change of plans. And, like, I definitely get why Brooke was upset. It was very late. Her original ride was long gone because, I mean, Paige and her cousin had been gone for hours at that point.
So, like, at that point, what is she going to do?
Well, exactly. That was her point, you know, because she was essentially stranded at the end of a party that was winding down. She had her overnight bag with her, but no immediate way to get home or a place to crash. Like, she needed a ride. So sometime around 2 a.m. on the morning of June 22nd, 2013, Brooklyn left the party on Red Lick Road with two guys who offered to give her a lift. Now, these were not random strangers.
Okay.
They were people who Brooke knew, at least somewhat. Like, again, they weren't like close or anything, but she knew who they were. But as I alluded to in the intro of this, their identities have not been officially released by police. But it's been reported that one of them, Josh, was either a friend or a relative of Brooke's ex-fiance, Jared.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
She has an ex-fiance?
Yeah. Even though she was young, Brooke had recently been engaged to an 18-year-old man named Jared. She had broken it off not long before her disappearance, but she and Jared remained on good terms. So, yeah, it sounds like basically small town high school sweethearts. They got engaged and then were like, wait a second, maybe we're too young to be doing this right now.
Yeah.
And kind of broke it off. But they were cool with each other. So, like, they were still friends. They were still like texting and hanging out and stuff like that. So in any case, that's how she knew this one guy, Josh. And like I said, their names have not been officially released. And so I saw the name Josh in literally one source. So I can't even be completely sure that that's his actual name. We'll call him Josh because, you know, we need to call him something. But I do not know who this guy is. So like I said, he's apparently either a friend or a relative of Jared, Brooke's ex-fiance. So that's how she kind of knew who he was. And there was the other guy in the car. And I don't know if she knew him or if she kind of like it was the same thing, like he was a friend of a friend's type of situation or what. But Josh was the one who was driving.
So I'm sorry, was the plan for them to take her home?
So that's a very good question, because they weren't super far from her home. And so for me, yes, that would make sense. But I don't know what the actual plan was, because they did not take her home. And I don't know if that was like something they agreed upon at the beginning or like when that decision happened. But instead of heading straight home, the trio made a detour to look at some horses at a farm along Floyd Branch Road.
And how late at night is
this? It's like 2 a.m.
Okay.
But yes, it sounds odd, but in rural Kentucky, like late night joyrides or hangouts at farms aren't unheard of, especially if alcohol is involved and people are killing time. So after this brief stop to see the horses, they dropped the other guy off. Basically, it sounds like he was drunk and just really needed to go home. So they dropped him off, and I don't know where he lived, like what the distance was from his house compared to like where Brooke lived, to where the party
or
was.
Wherever this horse farm was.
Yeah, like, so I have no, unfortunately, because that information hasn't been released, I can't map that out for you, right? So I can't say, oh, well, this guy lived 5 minutes away and Brooke lived 30 minutes away. Like, I don't know.
Could have been his family's horse farm.
Well, no. So it sounds like it was Josh's family's horse farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And we'll get to that a little bit more in a minute. But it sounds like that's why they were there. Because, like, these were horses that Josh was kind of looking after.
Gotcha.
So they drop the other guy off. Then it's just Brooke and Josh, right? So Josh offered to take Brooke back to his place on Dillon Court, where she could presumably wait until morning when someone was available to pick her up. By approximately 4 a.m. on June 22, 2013, Brooklyn Farthing arrived at the house on Dillon Court where Josh was staying. The property was a small single-story house situated just off of U.S. Highway 421. Now, because we don't really know who Josh is, I don't have any background on him or know why he was living in this house. So I don't know for sure if it was a relative's, if it was his house or what. But what I do know is that at the time, the house was in foreclosure and the utilities were shut off.
I mean, to me, that sounds like he was squatting.
Right. So it was essentially an abandoned house, perhaps belonging to somebody in Josh's
sure.
family.
Yeah.
Right? That he was still using or staying in despite the utilities being shut off. The lack of electricity would later strike investigators as highly suspicious in regard to what happened next. But for now, the important fact is that around 4 a.m., Brooke was at this dark house with Josh, and she immediately became uneasy with the situation. And we know that because of phone records. Beginning at 4:15 a.m., she reached out for help. First, Brooke called her sister Paige on the phone and asked if Paige and their cousin could please come pick her up right now on Dillon Court. Paige was groggy. It was 4 a.m. and she felt terrible, but she had to say no. She didn't have a license. Like, remember, she had failed her driver's test that morning.
Right, yeah. And so where's Paige's cousin?
Well, she was there, but she had been drinking. And so she didn't feel comfortable driving anywhere. I feel so badly for these two girls, because at that time, at that moment, they were doing what they thought was the right
no,
thing.
Yeah, no, that's...
They were being responsible.
That is the sensible decision given the circumstances known at the time.
Exactly. Like, Paige was being responsible, saying, I don't have a license, I can't drive. And the cousin was being responsible, saying, I'm underage, I had drinks, I also should not drive. They were doing the right thing, but I know that they must have so much guilt for that. And I just feel so badly for them because they didn't do anything wrong. But I understand that the guilt must be really tough in this situation. They also didn't want to wake their mother up at that hour. And I have to guess that this is why Brooke hadn't asked Josh to just drive her straight home. We don't know the circumstances of like how Brooke really ended up at that house on Dillon Road. But I kind of have to believe, especially because there was this third guy in the car that they did end up dropping off. I have to kind of believe that she was like, OK, I don't want to go home because I'll be coming home in the middle of the night, like 2-3 a.m.
Right.
My mom's going to be pissed at me. I was supposed to be spending the night at my friend's house. I can see her thought process being, I'll just stay out, get somebody else to take me home at like a reasonable time in the morning.
Yeah, because you could still pass it off as I was out. I spent the night with my friends.
Yeah, and I just came home early.
Yeah.
Right? But like coming home at 3-4 in the morning.
You can't really cover for that.
Right. And so I don't know. This is speculation on my part, but I have to believe
that's
kind of what was going through her head.
Yeah,
right?
No, it totally makes sense.
Because it doesn't seem like, even, you know, given the facts that we know, I just don't see it like she was taken home from that party thinking she was going home and they like, we're like, no, we're not taking you home.
We're taking you to this horse farm.
Right. And then this house.
And then this abandoned house.
But like, first
house.
You're going to drop off this guy. But like, also, this is all against your will. Like, I don't see that being what happened, you know? I think that she got in there and she was like, yeah, I'll hang out for a little while. It'll be fine. But once she actually got there and was in the situation, she started to feel uncomfortable. Paige later said that during this brief call, Brooks seemed completely all right, in the sense that her voice was steady and she didn't sound drunk or panicked. Brooks told Paige no problem. She'd find another ride and that she would text her ex-fiance, Jared, to see if he could get her instead. Going back to Paige's perspective, like, this is a fairly typical situation, I feel like, right?
Yeah.
When you've got friends, sisters, you know, whoever it is, like, you're all partying, it's like, one person couldn't get in your ride, like somebody else has to give you a ride. Like, this is just what happens. Nobody's freaking out at this point, you know? Nobody thinks this is an emergency because Brooke sounded fine. Brooke then reached out to Jared. Jared was working an overnight shift at a factory, which is why he wasn't like at the party or around before this. So in those texts, Brooke pleaded with him saying, can you hurry? Please hurry. And I'm scared.
Of his cousin?
Well, no, I don't know that it's his cousin. It's either a friend or a family member.
Okay.
I don't know exactly who it is, but it is somebody Jared knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, she was like, I need help.
And I'm assuming we only have parts of this conversation because the local PD hasn't released all of it.
Right. Yeah. They haven't released all of it. But yeah, we do have that. Like, those are direct quotes. And those were released, I think, by Brooke's family. But, you know, they were released. So we do know that that's what she was texting Jared at that point. And we have the timestamps. So Brooke told him that she was at Josh's house on Dillon Court and effectively asked him to come pick her up as soon as he could. Jared replied that he would head out to get her as soon as his shift finished up, which would be around 6 a.m. It was only about a 20-minute drive from Jared's job to Dillon Court, so Brooke just needed to hang tight for like an hour or so. So he'd probably get there at 6:30. Yeah, so about 2 hours. However, even knowing that she had somebody coming to get her, Brooke's fear did not subside. In fact, it seems to have escalated in that lonely, dark house with no electricity. Over the next hour, roughly 4:30 a.m. to 5:30 a.m., Brooke kept calling and texting multiple friends, desperately trying to find anyone else who might be awake and able to come get her sooner than Jared could. It's clear that Brooke did not feel safe staying there 1 minute longer than necessary. We don't know exactly what or who frightened her, but her messages made it clear that something wasn't right. Because from what I understand, she never said anything specific like, I feel threatened by Josh, like he's being weird to me. Like it was never anything direct like that. It was more just general, like I'm scared, I'm uncomfortable, I don't want to be here. Then at 5:30 a.m., something very unsettling happened. Jared received one more text from Brooklyn's phone. But this time, the tone was completely different. The text said, quote, never mind, I'm okay. I'm going to a party in Rockcastle County, end quote.
Well, I mean, clearly that wasn't sent by her.
Right. And Jared obviously thought that was weird
because what party in Rockcastle County at 5:30 a.m.? Like,
right,
you know, like that's the neighboring county, but like
that's also when parties are ending, not when
we're gonna go
starting.
Roll up, you know, like that's insane.
Hey, come over and have a breakfast. Have like a like a brunch party.
Yeah, are we doing Bloody Marys?
It's not
like,
something
these are teenagers,
that, yeah, it's not something
know?
Kids do.
No, absolutely not. So Jared texted back asking who she was going with because he's like, what are you even talking about? But Brooklyn didn't respond. Investigators and Brooklyn's family strongly suspect that it was not Brooke who sent that text at 5:30 a.m. Instead, it was probably someone who was using her phone, attempting to make it seem like Brooke had left voluntarily. Again, at the time, Jared just thought this was weird, you know?
Yeah.
He wasn't full on panicking or anything. Like, his mind didn't immediately go to, like, this isn't Brooke, you know? It's just like, this is a weird text for her to send. And that was it.
Yeah. And I mean, like, they had already, yes, they were still friends, but, like, they broke up.
Right.
So, like, whatever she was doing was, you know, that's her business.
Exactly. Like, he'll be there if she needs him to pick her up or whatever. But, like, if she wants to go to a weird party at 5:30 a.m., like, yeah, I guess he's just going to say, okay, have fun.
Yeah.
You know, what is he going to do? So this is the important part of the timeline. Because sometime between 5:30 and 7 a.m. on the morning of June 22nd, Brooklyn Farthing disappeared. Now, what we know next about the timeline comes from Josh, the 20-year-old man who had brought Brooke to his house on Dillon Court. And this is all according to Josh's later statements, which have been relayed from Brooklyn's family. So, like, these are the statements he told them and that he told the cops, but, like, Josh has obviously never spoken publicly. The cops haven't really said anything. So Brooklyn's family is like, this is what Josh told us, you know? So according to him, he decided to leave his house around 5:30 a.m. before Jared arrived because he needed to go take care of his family's horses early that morning. So I think these are, again, the same horses. Now, it goes without saying that leaving an 18-year-old girl alone in this weird remote house with no power or water at dawn sounds like extremely questionable behavior. But that's what Josh's story was. He left Brooke by herself at his place. He said he was gone for roughly an hour to tend to the horses. And when he returned around 7 a.m., he encountered a terrifying scene. His front porch couch was engulfed in flames, and the fire was beginning to spread to the rest of the house. Josh said he immediately called 911. Volunteer firefighters from the area responded quickly and managed to put out the blaze before the entire structure burned down. Still, the couch was completely destroyed, basically burned right down to the metal frame. And there was smoke and fire damage to the interior of the house and the front entrance. But Brooklyn was nowhere to be found at the scene. What was found were Brooklyn's personal belongings scattered in and around the house. Her purse, her overnight bag, and even her cowgirl boots that she'd worn with her outfit that night. In fact, nearly everything Brooke had with her was left behind, except the clothes she had been wearing, so like her comfy clothes, and her cell phone. Those two items and Brooke herself had vanished. I work from home, so it drives me crazy when my house is a mess, but I don't really have the time or the mental energy to keep it looking as clean as I want. That's why I'm so glad that HomeAglow exists. They're a top-rated home service platform that's dedicated to making your space clean and tidy. And what I love is their flexibility and how easy it is to use. They have online booking capabilities that allow you to instantly schedule a cleaner in your area for a special occasion, party, or for regular cleanings. Cleaning Trainers pass a rigorous certification process and maintain a 4.8-star average platform rating. It's a fantastic way to support cleaners in your community, and 100% of cleaning fees and tips go directly to your cleaner. To schedule a cleaning, you simply go to HomeAglow's website to choose the day and time you're looking for and the duration of your cleaning to match with the cleaner. The best part is their Forever Clean membership, which saves you $30 an hour on all future cleanings. You can book unlimited cleanings starting at $19 an hour, backed by HomeAglow's happiness guarantee. Take home cleaning off your plate this fall by using HomeAglow. Head to homeaglow.com/ATTWG to get your first 3 hours of cleaning for only $19. That's HomeAglow.com/ATTWG. Are you planning a trip abroad this year? Imagine how much better your travel experience could be if you could speak the language. With Rosetta Stone, you'll gain the confidence to have real conversations and create deeper connections wherever you go. Rosetta Stone is the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your schedule. One of my favorite places to visit is Spain, and as it turns out, my 3 years of high school Spanish does not quite cut it over there. And that's what's great about Rosetta Stone. You can learn faster and retain longer. They immerse you in your new language naturally, which helps you think and communicate with confidence. There are no English translations, so you truly learn to speak, listen, and think in your chosen language. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. And Then They Were Gone listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Did you know that a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? If you've been listening to this show for a while, you know that I tried the True Age and True Health test by True Diagnostic, and it showed me things I never learned from my regular physicals. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. You'll see your vitamin levels, your nutrient balance, inflammation, gut health, and more. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number, it shows how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are all aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations to improve your health and slow down aging. For me, it really inspired me to work on my cardiovascular health. It's so hard to get answers at the doctor's office, so I loved getting this report that had so much information on it. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code ATTWG for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Even better, you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. We've been advertising Mood for a while. They've been really good to us. And after trying some of their gummies, it is wild how different each one feels. Those sleepy time gummies will knock you out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. They've got immune support, menopause relief, PMS, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and all of them use federally legal cannabis, and it's all grown on small family-owned American farms, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. And best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com and remember, use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order.
And I have a theory, but I don't want to get into it yet.
Oh, okay. Basically, the house is on fire. Brooklyn vanished. Her stuff's left behind. But of course, Brooke's family didn't know any of this at the time. They all woke up and went about their day as normal. They didn't know that something was wrong until later when Brooke didn't show up to a car show she was supposed to attend in Somerset. She was meeting friends there, and when Brooke didn't show, they reached out to Paige, who also didn't know where she was. So Paige, of course, immediately called Brooke, but got no answer. So she started asking around, but no one had heard from her all day. They frantically called and texted Brooke's phone hundreds of times. Records show over 1,000 call and text attempts were made to her cell in the first 24 hours after she went missing. And that was literally from everybody she knew. Because again, we're talking about a small town, right? So when she didn't show up, her friends were trying to get a hold of her. They contacted Paige. Paige was trying to get a hold of her. Then the whole family got involved. Then they were calling everybody else. And everybody, basically in Kentucky, it feels like, was trying to reach Brooke at this time. Early on, Brooke's phone would ring when dialed, but nobody ever answered. Later, after a couple of days, the phone stopped ringing. So by then, it had either died or it was shut off. The last cell tower pings from her phone were later traced to an area just a few miles from the house on Dillon Court, but her phone was never recovered. Brooke's family reported her missing as soon as they were able, but of course, because they reported her missing that day, that Saturday. But because she was 18, an illegal adult, law enforcement told them to buzz off.
Yeah.
So they had to consider the possibility that she might have left on her own accord. In fact, Kentucky State Police spokesperson Trooper Paul Blanton publicly stated in the early days that they hoped Brooke was missing because she wanted to be.
I mean, that's fair to say that you hope.
Right. And honestly,
I hope. Yeah. But that wasn't how the investigation originally started. Just based on she'll come back. It's fine to hope that.
Yeah, for sure. And it kind of was and it wasn't, right? So they tried to report her missing on Saturday and they're like, oh no, she'll come back. I mean, and to be fair, she was an 18-year-old woman who went to a party and just wasn't home the next morning.
Right.
Which isn't the craziest thing that's ever happened.
Right, because at this point they don't know, quote unquote, Josh, this is.
They don't know any of that. They don't know about the fire. They don't know that her stuff was at his house.
Right.
They don't know this yet. All they know is that a girl went to a party and she didn't go to a car show the next day. That does not sound like an emergency. On Saturday, when they tried to report her missing, the cops are okay, not super interested. That day, it was up to Brooklyn's family to kind of retrace her steps, right? It was just up to them. So Paige managed to figure out who Brooke had left the party with, and she was able to get Josh's number. So she had Tasha give him a call. Tasha's the older sister. She told them that they were worried about Brooke, and he said that she'd gotten a ride with him, but that he'd left while she was at his house because he was uncomfortable staying there alone with her because she was Jared's ex-fiance.
So his story is slightly different than I left because didn't he tell the cops later he left to go tend to his horses?
Yeah. So I think his story to Tasha was kind of both. I don't think he contradicted himself. I think it was more I went to go tend to the horses, but I left then because I didn't want to be alone in this house with Brooke because she's Jared's ex-fiance. And I wanted to be above board.
I'm calling bullshit on all of this, but go ahead.
Right. But
I'll get to my theory at some point, but yes.
Sure. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think those two things were contradictory.
Sure.
On their face.
I think by the time the cops got around to him, he had refined his story.
Perhaps. Well, yeah, it gets even worse. He also told Tasha that before he left, Brooke had been talking about a party in Rockcastle County while smoking a cigarette on the couch on his front porch.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is all very convenient for him.
Yeah. Because as
to cover everything that is known
right,
up to this point.
Because as we know, the last text that was sent from Brooklyn's phone was to Jared saying she was going to a party in Rockcastle County.
And she's smoking
mm-hmm.
on the front porch couch.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I'm getting there.
Okay.
So 20 minutes after this call ended, Josh called Tasha back saying that he was scared. All of Brooklyn's belongings, including her cowboy boots, purse, and some clothing, were at his house, and he believed the cigarette she'd been smoking had been the cause of a fire on his porch that morning. In cases like this, stories get told, facts get confused. So I don't know. I can't say 100% that this was two separate calls and that he did not mention the fire on the first call. But from what I've been able to find, he didn't mention the fire in the first call. He called her back and was like, oh, shit, all of her stuff is at my house. Oh, and by the way, I had to call 911 this morning because the place I last saw your sister was burning down. So I don't know. It seems very bad and very suspicious, but again, this just could be a mistake in the retelling of a story over 13 years.
Could be. I'll give you the mistake in the retelling of the story as far as when he told her about the fire.
Yeah.
It seems a little too convenient, the whole going to a party at 5 in the morning, which does not make any sense.
5:30
in the morning. Which does not make any sense at all.
No.
Right? Convenient that he overheard that, but he was, like, freaked out to the point of leaving the house because she was Jared's ex-fiance.
Right.
Also convenient that she was smoking a cigarette.
On the couch.
On the couch.
Yeah.
That was then ablaze when he, quote-unquote, came back from tending to his family's horses. This is all...
And also, it's like, why, if you're so uncomfortable with her being at your house, which is fine, why did you bring her back there in the first place? Like,
yeah, why didn't you, if you were
just take her home,
capable enough to drive to this farm to see a horse at 2 a.m.
Yeah,
and
like
then,
you could have just taken her home. I mean, she wasn't that far away. And even if she's like, oh, my mom will be mad. It's like, if you're so uncomfortable with her being at your house, just be like, I'm sorry, your mom will be mad. Sounds like a you problem. Like, I'll drop you off. You fucking figure that part of it out. Or you can stay at this party.
I can't imagine this was a one-room house either. Like, if
it's like a normal rancher.
If you're uncomfortable, like, have her sleep. Like, lock your fucking door.
Right.
Go to your bedroom and lock your door.
Yeah.
And text Jared and just be like,
Hey,
bro, your ex is here.
She's at my house.
She's
crashing
here.
Like, no big deal. Like,
I'm staying in my room.
Right.
She's
staying on the couch.
Yeah, wherever.
Like, whatever. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Like, there are so many ways to make it, like, not super weird, but he didn't choose any of those.
No. What it sounds like to me is that he created all of this to fit the facts of what happened.
Right.
Things that he couldn't deny.
Right.
She was missing. His couch was ablaze.
Right. He took her home from the party. Like, there were witnesses to that fact. Like,
right.
You know, you're right. I mean, there was no chance that he could deny being with her at that time.
Right.
Plenty of people knew that they were together. So let's get back to June 22nd. At this point, Brooke's family clearly knew that something was very wrong. Yet, they had to endure an agonizing wait until Sunday, June 23rd, to formally file a missing persons report with the Kentucky State Police. By that time, however, it was abundantly clear to those who knew Brooke that this was no voluntary disappearance or a simple miscommunication. Something terrible had happened in that short window of time around daybreak that morning. The investigation into Brooklyn Farthing's disappearance kicked off in full on June 23, 2013, once authorities received the missing persons report. Kentucky State Police Post 7 in Richmond took the lead since Berea falls in their jurisdiction, and Trooper Paul Blanton became one of the public spokespeople for the case. Right away, investigators zeroed in on the bizarre circumstances at the Dillon courthouse. The fact that a fire had broken out at the very location Brooke was last seen raised serious suspicions. Arson investigators examined the scene and noted the peculiar nature of the blaze. The house had no electricity, which ruled out many common accidental fire triggers. It couldn't have been an electrical short circuit or an appliance malfunction, for instance. Trooper Blanton even told ABC News, quote, "It doesn't make any sense that the fire would start the way it did," end quote. And he also said that KSP was treating the fire as suspicious. Inside the house, police found clear evidence that, like Josh had told Tasha, Brooklyn had been there. Her overnight bag was packed and sitting there untouched. Her purse, keys, and boots were also left behind. So to law enforcement, this was an ominous sign. Trooper Blanton said, quote, "By the fact that her personal property was still at the house, it makes you believe she is possibly in danger," end quote. And of course, Brooke's family immediately insisted she would never have left all of her stuff behind and taken off on foot. She had even left her brand new driver's license in her purse, and that alone was telling since she was so excited to have gotten it that morning. As Blanton noted, typically an 18-year-old who had chosen to disappear would at least take their phone, wallet, and a change of clothes. Brooke had none of those. Only the clothes on her back and her cell phone were unaccounted for. One of the first steps for police was to interview the last person or persons who had seen Brooklyn. That, of course, meant questioning Josh. KSP has never released the full content of that interview, but Blanton confirmed that they did speak to the owner of the home and others who were with Brooke that night. So that to me kind of sounds like it was maybe a family member or somebody who owned the house. So they interviewed them and Josh because he was with her that night. But no arrests were made and no official suspects were named. Josh was not charged with anything at that time. He was essentially treated as a witness. Blanton said in late June 2013 that they had no person of interest publicly identified in Brooklyn's case. It's worth noting, however, that from the family's perspective, suspicion centered on Josh almost immediately. He was the last person with Brooke, and his story seemed fishy.
Right, and I'm sure KSP is extremely suspicious of him as well, but there's no evidence of anything, so he's just a person of interest at this point.
Right, and the evidence that they do have can line up with Josh's story. As dumb as the story is,
right,
there's nothing that really contradicts it.
No.
Meanwhile, search efforts ramped up at a massive scale. KSP put out alerts asking landowners in four counties, Madison, Estill, Jackson, and Rockcastle, to inspect their properties for any sign of Brooklyn. They specifically asked people to look out for freshly turned earth, unusual odors, or disturbed areas in remote spots like fields, ditches, and wooded hollows. This request was broadcast via local media on July 5th, 2013, less than 2 weeks after Brooke had vanished, indicating that police feared the worst, that Brooke's remains might have been hidden, and they knew that the search area could be vast.
Right, but didn't they have the last known ping of her cell phone?
They did, and so I think once they had that, they concentrated on that area. So ground searches were concentrated in the Redlick and Berea area where she was last seen. So remember, the party was on Redlick Road, and then Dillon Court is in Berea. Authorities, joined by community volunteers, scoured more than 16,000 acres across three counties in those first weeks. Search teams included KSP troopers, Madison County police, firefighters, cadaver dogs, search and rescue teams on horseback, and even divers checking ponds and lakes. And the terrain in that region is challenging. There are dense woods, sinkholes, steep limestone cliffs, and even copperhead snakes. It was not an easy search area, but volunteers didn't shy away. On one coordinated search, about 3 weeks after her disappearance, around 200 volunteers showed up to help, many on horseback to cover rough areas. They focused on a 1.5-mile radius around the Dillon Courthouse, fanning out to look for any trace of Brooke. So that 1.5-mile radius, I think that was probably based on the cell phone pings. But despite these exhaustive efforts, no significant clues were found. There was no sign of a body, no pieces of Brooke's clothing, nothing in the surrounding woods or fields that provided answers.
And I'm sure it hasn't been released, or maybe they didn't even do this, but we don't know if that 1.5-mile circumference also included Josh's family's farm.
Oh, where the horses were? Yeah, I don't think it did. I think that was a little bit further away, but yeah, I'm not exactly sure of the location of that.
Yeah.
Investigators also monitored Brooklyn's cell phone activity closely, and that's when they were able to trace the last ping to somewhere within a few miles of that house. This suggests that whoever had the phone possibly destroyed it, or they could have turned it off after realizing people were calling incessantly. Or they could have just dumped it somewhere and it just died. I mean, unfortunately, we really don't know. But throughout the investigation, the fire on the couch remained a focal point. Fire investigators determined that the blaze originated on the couch itself, and aside from Brooke's cigarette, which Josh blamed, there was no obvious ignition source. It's unclear, like I said, if any accelerant was used, because police have not disclosed those details. But they also have never said that this was an accidental fire. Leads poured in as the case garnered local media attention that summer. KSP set up a dedicated phone line and urged anyone with information, no matter how small, to call. In those early days, they even made a point to say that if Brooke herself was out there, she could call them directly and let them know she was okay, even if she didn't want her family to know her whereabouts. And this shows that initially police kept the door open to the possibility that Brooke might have taken off voluntarily. But as time went on with no credible sightings, that scenario lost steam. By the summer of 2013, the investigation had hit roadblocks. Many tips have been chased down with no results. In August 2013, 2 months after Brooke vanished, the Huffington Post reported on the case, focusing on those eerie text messages that Brooke had sent. The story made national news on several occasions. ABC News' website ran a piece in June 2013 highlighting Brooke's family's pleas and the odd fire connection. And NBC's Dateline and Investigation Discovery's platforms also featured Brooke in their missing segments in the years that followed. But despite this coverage, no concrete breakthroughs occurred. Brooke's case gradually went from an active search to a frustrating cold case, though Kentucky State Police have insisted that it remains an open investigation. Over time, some private investigators and amateur sleuths also took interest in Brooke's case. At one point, a retired private investigator speculated that Brooke's disappearance might be linked to a couple of other missing persons cases in Kentucky. But law enforcement has not confirmed any connection. And those theories in general just really haven't panned out into anything solid. So now, 12 years later, the question at the heart of this case remains. What happened to Brooklyn Farthing? And over time, of course, some theories have come up.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game. Delivering legal THC products right to your door no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so you said you had your theory, but let me start this and then you can like jump in, because I'm sure your theory lines up with like one of the ones
I'm sure
I'm going to give here, right?
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, so theory one is foul play by the person she was last seen with. This is a theory Brooke's family and investigators seem to largely believe. In this scenario, the man who was last with Brooke, Josh, is assumed to know more than he has said. Perhaps there was an argument or an assault, and it led to Brooke's death. In this theory, the fire was set intentionally to destroy evidence. The suspicious timing of the fire and the 5:30 a.m. text strongly support foul play. The last text, "I'm okay, going to a party," it sounds like a red herring that was likely sent by the perpetrator to mislead Jared and anyone else who was looking for Brooke. Brooke's family also points out that she would never have left without her belongings if she was truly okay and going somewhere. All signs point to an abduction or homicide occurring at that house or immediately after. But unfortunately, without a body or direct witnesses, aside from the person responsible, police have not had enough evidence to charge anyone. Josh maintains that he left Brooke alone and came back to a fire, implying that someone else could have come along. Brooke's family openly suspects that Josh harmed Brooke and then tried to cover it up. But again, no charges have been filed. But it is the leading theory. Brooklyn was met with foul play at Dillon Court, and her disappearance was then concealed by the person she had asked to help her that night.
I mean, yeah, that's basically what my theory was. I mean, it's obvious, right? Like,
yeah.
Clearly something happened on the couch. She was probably murdered there. It's an easy way to cover up. I mean, if that's where it occurred, if there was any evidence there, it's an easy way to cover it up is just burn it.
Right.
Because,
like, if there's DNA evidence on the couch. Like,
there's no coming back from that.
Blood, fluids, whatever it may right. be.
Then I think he took her somewhere. Probably to his relative's farm, and she's on that property. There was no search done of that property.
That we know of. And again, they've just kept everything so tight that it's really hard to say.
It doesn't seem like there was a search warrant executed on his car.
Oh, yeah.
We know she was in the car.
Right.
She had to get to the house somehow.
Yeah. So again, if you find like a hair, for instance.
That doesn't
prove anything.
No, but bodily fluids in the trunk.
Exactly. Might. Yeah. Like, did cadaver dogs ever look at the car?
We don't know.
Yeah. Did a forensic team ever look at the car? And again, like I said, touch DNA, you know, in the front or back seat. I don't know where she was allegedly
right.
sitting.
That's going to be there
That's
if
nothing.
She was in the car.
Hair is nothing, right? But yeah, if there's anything in the trunk, if there are any fluids, like
right.
anything like that, you're right, then that would be something.
So that's my theory.
Yeah.
Is that most likely a sexual assault occurred on the couch. Pure speculation. Things didn't go Josh's way. Strangulation.
Yeah.
Bodily fluids or evidence of some sort got onto the couch. He took her and then torched the couch to burn all the evidence. And if that was the only place that the crime occurred, all evidence of the crime is gone if they didn't search or couldn't search his vehicle.
Right. And it would make sense. So if that couch was on the front porch, which again, that has been a little iffy in a lot of news stories, right? A lot of it, it does seem like it was on the front porch. And if the house had no electricity, it would make sense that they would just stay on the front porch because there's no reason to go inside. Remember, this is June in Kentucky. Like, I'm sure it was hot as hell in that house.
Right.
So I feel like it would have been more comfortable, more pleasant to just be on a couch on the porch.
I mean, it's not just because he has a couch on the porch doesn't mean there isn't a couch inside either.
No, I know that, but I just think it would be more uncomfortable inside.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to me that they would have just been on that couch on the porch as opposed to a couch inside or anywhere else inside.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up without air conditioning in the rural parts of Pennsylvania. And yeah, you'd go outside at night because it was the only reprieve you got.
Yeah. So, I mean, that fits.
That makes sense. The fact that they were on the couch outside, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But I also think that that's probably where the crime occurred.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, given that, it makes sense that there wouldn't necessarily be evidence inside that he had to worry about.
Right.
It does seem likely that it could have been all concentrated right there on the porch. And if you get rid of what's on the porch, then you're good.
Yeah. Fire destroys all evidence.
Right. And if there wasn't anything to destroy, it's fine. Yes, there was smoke damage or whatever. But
sure. I mean, it's not really his house anyway. He was basically slumming there.
Okay. So theory two, though, is an abduction by a third party.
Okay.
And this is the possibility that Josh was basically implying that someone else came to the house after he left and that person harmed or kidnapped Brooke.
Random person just happened to stumble across this young girl sitting on a couch. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, okay. But if Josh truly did leave Brooke alone, it's conceivable that Brooke, feeling unsafe, might have stepped outside, you know, like kind of like out beyond the porch, or even started walking down the road in hopes of finding help or meeting Jared sooner. So in that vulnerable moment, a predator could have come upon her. Perhaps a passerby saw Brooke alone and seized an opportunity.
So we're going from like a really badly written horror story to an even worsely written horror story? Because like, okay, so like she's sending these texts saying she's uncomfortable in this house.
Yeah.
And then the theory is that once the... Again, in theory, the person that's making her uncomfortable leaves the house. Then she goes outside of the house and gets abducted by somebody completely random.
Yeah.
So this is just a hotbed of
weirdos.
Weirdos and abductors. And this just happened. I don't buy that for a second.
Right. Because you're right. The problem with this theory is that it's the rural location, the short time frame. It was pre-dawn on a dead-end street, so random traffic would be minimal. However, there were houses nearby, so I was definitely picturing like a very rural house, you know, in the middle of the woods, like whatever. But I Google mapped it, and it's on a cul-de-sac. Like, there are neighbors fully right there, but there are woods behind them. Like, it is a rural area, but the house itself is not alone. And I did look around. So there's a shopping center close by, but it has like a grocery store and a few other, like a Dollar General is near there. So all things that definitely would have been closed. Google Maps does have a Marathon gas station also nearby. But number one, I don't know if that was there in 2013. And if it was, I don't know if it's a 24-hour gas station. So that may or may not have even been an option. The random grocery store, I can almost guarantee, is not 24 hours. We know Dollar General isn't. My point is that there were things around her.
Yes.
But I don't think there was anything that was necessarily helpful around her.
And then if we are going with that theory, we also have to go back to the fact that she left all of her shit there.
Right,
with
for no reason.
Of her cell phone.
And like it's if stuff she had been carrying around all night.
Right, if she was choosing to leave that house,
she would have taken all her
shit. She would have taken it with her.
100%. And that's the thing. Like, this is stuff she'd been carrying with her all night long. And so there's no reason why at that point she's like, oh, I couldn't possibly. Let me just take my phone
now,
and leave my purse at this random dude's foreclosed house. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
So, okay. So another theory, though, which makes a little more sense, is basically a variant on the first theory, on the foul play theory. This is the theory that perhaps Brooke died as the result of an accident of some sort. And someone panicked and hit her body. So, for instance, she could have overdosed or she could have fallen and hit her head, and they removed her in a misguided attempt to avoid blame and burn the couch.
Sure.
If it was just simply an accident, you would think somebody would just call 911, but that doesn't necessarily happen. But again, the moving of the body and like the cover up, I mean, that's criminal behavior, right? Like, so even if the death itself was an accident,
right?
Like, that's still criminal behavior afterwards. So you're not helping yourself.
No, not at all. So,
it's
still
a very bad situation.
I'm willing to go to the extent to say that drugs were involved.
I would go to the extent saying it's a possibility.
Yes.
I just don't know enough about her or anybody else's background to say that definitively.
Sure. But those texts, now obviously we don't know the full extent of the text, but what we do know from the text, that could also be drug-induced paranoia.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Like nothing was actually happening, but she was freaking out a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I don't necessarily think that's what happened.
No, but I think that's
it could be
a possibility.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, accidental death, however that occurred, you then went to the extent of moving and hiding the body. So,
and it hasn't been found for 13 years. Like, that's weird.
Yeah, it doesn't remove any guilt or culpability.
Right. Now, the last theory, of course.
Aliens.
No. Voluntary disappearance.
Ah, yes. Right.
This
because everybody leaves all of their belongings behind.
Everybody.
They walk out with their PJs, and at some point down the road, they toss their cell phone, never to be found again.
Yeah, and they start a new life. So, of course, this was investigators' initial thoughts, but once a lot of time had passed, it did not
seem
likely.
Well, I think also once they got to his house, it seemed
and
like...
And saw it on fire? Yeah. Then it seems like maybe she didn't just randomly leave.
Right, and all of her stuff was still there.
Yeah.
Like, none of that was adding up.
Exactly. Her sister Tasha flatly stated, quote, "My sister had no reason to run away. She made arrangements to get a ride home and had plans the next day. Not a day goes by I don't wonder about her," end quote. While all available evidence points to a specific person at least knowing more about Brooke's disappearance than he said, official statements from law enforcement carefully avoid accusing anyone by name. Trooper Justin Kearney, who became a public information officer on the case in later years, reiterated that, quote, "We just need that one missing link," end quote, and that any small tip could break it open. They just don't have enough right now. For the Farthing family, there's little doubt in their minds that Brooke met with violence that night. Her mother, Shelby, in a rare interview on the third anniversary of Brooke's disappearance, voiced the family's anguish, saying, quote, "We've sat and we've waited and we've prayed and we've cried and screamed, and I'm still here today and no Brooke. So we're lost. We're lost," end quote. The family's resolve, however, is strong. They continue to push for the truth. They've been clear that they want justice for Brooke and they want anyone involved held accountable. As Shelby poignantly asked during a vigil, quote, "How important is it to get Brooke home? It's took our whole family, and we were the best little family," end quote. Over the years, Tasha Thomas, Brooke's older sister, has emerged as a particularly outspoken voice. She has said, quote, "I feel I need to be the voice for my sister," end quote, explaining why she continually does interviews, organizes events, and runs social media pages to keep Brooke's story in the public eye. The family set up an official website, findbrookfarthing.com, and a Facebook page, Missing Brooklyn Farthing, to share updates and gather tips. They offer ways to help, from putting up window decals with proceeds going to the reward fund to simply sharing Brooke's story online. Every year on the anniversary, the family makes sure Brooklyn is remembered. For example, on the third anniversary in 2016, family and friends gathered outside 113 Dillon Court, the very house where Brooke was last seen, to hold a vigil. They prayed together and released balloons, each carrying messages and prayers skyward in Brooke's honor. It was an emotional scene. Standing in front of that now abandoned, boarded up house, Brooke's mother, Shelby, said, quote, "It's like I want to go over there and open that door and think I'm going to see her sitting there. And I know that's not true." End quote. To Shelby, that empty house was the last link to her daughter. She said, quote, "For me, this is all I have. This is the only place I can go." End quote. The vigil attendees also spoke a phrase in their prayers that resonates deeply. They prayed for open doors and open mouths, meaning that they hope for a break in the case, that someone who knows something will finally step forward. The Farthing Walker family continues to fight for Brooklyn. It's evident that Brooke's disappearance has left a permanent void. Her grandfather, Papa Kenny, whom they celebrated the night before she went missing, passed away not long after, not knowing what happened to Brooke. It was one of their many heartbreaks. Over the years, the family's advocacy has one clear message. They need answers. They urge anyone who might know something to do the right thing and speak up. They believe that multiple people might have knowledge of what happened, even if indirectly. Perhaps someone heard a confession or a rumor back in 2013 and hasn't shared it. The family's prayer is that those with information will find the courage to make that call. They have faith that even after all this time, justice for Brooke is possible. Brooklyn Farthing has been missing from Berea, Kentucky since June 22, 2013. She's a white female with blonde hair and brown eyes. She has pierced ears and a birthmark on her left hip. At the time of her disappearance, Brooke was approximately 5'1" and 105 pounds. She was last seen wearing a gray t-shirt with a Madison County FFA, Future Farmers of America logo, and light blue denim shorts. Brooke was 18 when she went missing. She would be 30 today. If you have any information on the disappearance of Brooklyn Farthing, no matter how minor it may seem, please contact the Kentucky State Police Post 7 at 859-623-2404. There is a $14,000 reward for information leading to Brooke's whereabouts or the arrest and conviction of those responsible. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.